Welcome back to the Rach and Brad podcast.
The kids are in bed.
I'm your host, Rach.
And I'm Brad.
Just kidding.
Oh my gosh. We got him so good.
That's the most... We're obviously parents. That was the lamest joke I've ever told.
It was Brad's idea.
It was. Thank you. And today's episode is all about our IVF process.
Super riveting.
Oh, actually, you know, I wish I would have listened to us. I guess we did listen to Matt and Dory's Eggslit Adventure.
Exactly.
If you haven't checked out their podcast, check out their podcast.
Is it still going?
Yeah, it's still going.
Wow. They spoil, they're very entertaining.
Spoiler alert. They had a baby.
Ah,
I know.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like six tries or something.
Oh my gosh.
I know. That's, good for them.
Yeah.
They were a really cool couple.
Yeah, they were very inspiring and positive.
We actually reached out to Dory for some reason. What was that? She was asking for like cost. Was it a cost survey?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Anyway.
Feels like a lifetime ago that we even did this stuff.
We swapped emails with Dory. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember like processing the news that we needed to do IVF and just like researching it to death.
You?
Yes.
If anybody's ever met Rachel, then they know how much she researches everything to death.
I like information.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
It's one of the reasons why I married you.
Uh-huh.
So we tried to conceive for about 12, 13 months. It didn't happen. Our regular doctors sent us to a reproductive endocrinologist.
That's correct. And so the reproductive endocrinologists typically are hard to get into. Like it takes, you have to delay several months before you can actually get an appointment with them. So I called up to the clinic I wanted to go to, and they said that we have an appointment available in like 2 months, or we have a cancellation tomorrow if you can make that.
If it would have been up to me, I would have waited the 2 months.
I was like, heck no, we'll take the one tomorrow. Brad had to like rearrange his work schedule, and we went up to Charleston the next day.
So we get up to Charleston, and gosh, the very first thing that we did, was it the blood test first before we even met with the doctor?
There was like a lot of baseline testing they wanted. So we both had to have blood work done. So we like, it was cute. We sat side by side and like had our blood drawn.
Made like vampire jokes or something silly.
Yeah, probably something stupid. And we all laughed and had the nurses rolling.
So for the women, do you remember like what they tested for? Like
hepatitis, gosh.
I'm sure.
A bunch
probably
of
all your hormone levels too,
hormones,
right?
Hormones. For me, it was probably, hormones at whatever point in my cycle I was at. But I had to repeat blood work a lot at different points in the cycle. So I think that they test for a lot of like bloodborne illness and disease that could be like infertility causing.
And then for the males, I think I only had my blood drawn twice. And yeah, I think one was for like diseases and then the other one's probably like testosterone levels. But I don't even know for sure. Like they weren't.
There was a whole list of things. Because I remember you got blood work done at the hospital or something, and then they were missing something that they wanted and we had to go back and repeat it.
Exactly. So expect to donate blood.
A lot.
Three or four times probably.
Yep. And they also did a baseline ultrasound on me, and that's where they saw that I had many, many follicles, meaning like a lot of potential eggs. They called me an ovary achiever.
Ovary achiever. That's super cute.
It was, yes. It was very like encouraging and everything looked good with me. And they also did the semen analysis there that
same
day.
Same day. We got the results right away. And my
boys
could not swim.
Right. The number was better than what we initially thought. Like the number, total number, but they were misshapen or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Right. Like the morphology was high.
Well,
anyway, the doctor basically said that we had a one in a million. No, one. If we tried for 10 years, we would get pregnant once, was basically how he put it.
If we like nailed it every cycle for 10 years, nailed it.
Yeah. He went straight to IVF.
Yeah, he said you can try an IUI if you want to, but He was not hopeful. And we also looked at the numbers, and I think this is hugely different at different clinics, but to do an IUI was like $3,000, and it had like a 30% chance or 25% chance of working. I think it was
even less than 30, yeah.
It wasn't great. It wasn't super encouraging. And so like based on that, we were like, well, we'd probably have to do that at least 3 times, and then we'd be almost to the cost of IVF, which we could just start right out the gate.
Exactly. So speaking of that, I think it was it at that first appointment that we met with the financial person?
Yes.
Yeah, so they have this program where basically it's like guarantee pregnancy.
Oh, yeah. It's like an insurance program.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably getting more common too. And it was like, if you don't get pregnant, you get a percentage of your money back based on what level you chose.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, it was like unlimited tries, wasn't it?
It for like the highest level, yeah. But it was pretty expensive.
It's like $45,000 or something.
Yeah, for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did not choose that.
Correct. We
rolled the dice and just did it once.
Right. Well, with male factor infertility, it was just like a better, it was like the best case scenario with the technology they have available to actually go in and select a good looking sperm, handsome sperm.
Which we'll get into in a minute.
Yeah. Just with the odds and the type of infertility we had, we didn't feel it was necessary to.
We were like the ideal IVF couple. We were a slam dunk case.
For sure. And that turned out to be true. Spoiler alert.
Okay. So we were assigned a nurse. She was super helpful.
She was. Allison.
Like, we met with Allison after we met with our reproductive endocrinologist. And she went over like how to administer a shot.
Yep. She went over like the whole calendar of what we could expect in the next few months. It was like as little as 6 weeks if we were able to do a fresh transfer, which we'll get into as well. And then, yeah, and then they kind of guided you on how to do a subcutaneous and an intramuscular injection, which you'd have to do both of.
So they literally had this little model that I practiced my injection on.
Stabbing.
And Rachel and I are both eye doctors. We're certified in injections, so we have a little bit of a background.
We're no stranger to stabbing each other. We had to do it in our phlebotomy lab in school. It was just so ridiculous, like all the things that we had to do.
Yeah, when we never really
did
that.
To be an eye doctor, yeah.
We don't do that. Well, we don't. There are some eye doctors.
That's true.
Some optometrists, we should say. So there's a difference. There's an optician, there's an optometrist, and then there's an ophthalmologist. The opticians make the glasses, dispense glasses. In some states, they can dispense contact lenses. Optometrist is a doctor of optometry. We prescribe, we diagnose, we treat and manage diseases. In some states, we can do lasers and injections. And then there's the ophthalmologist. They do the surgeries and the tough diseases.
Yep, in case you were wondering.
And they're doctors of medicine. Okay.
Yep, so that was the initial consultation. And just thinking back to that, like, we went to that on, like, Wednesday or something. And then we left for a church retreat on Thursday. So we had, and it was 16 hours away. So we had 16 hours in the car to just, like, mull over the fact that we were facing IVF to have kids, and then got to like go to this giant prayer weekend and like pray about it the whole weekend.
I forgot that's how it worked out.
Yeah, it was like probably the best.
Maybe that's why it worked on the first try.
The best timing. Yeah, probably. Yeah, it was just kind of neat, and there were a lot of prayers said, that's for sure, on our behalf.
So I guess the first step was they put you on birth control.
Yeah, which is so weird. Everyone's like, you're trying to have a baby. Why do you want to be on birth control? And basically, it's for some fertility clinics, they try to get people lined up on the same timing of their cycle. So all of their patients would go on birth control and then they would go off at the same time so that they can line up their egg retrieval, which is kind of the first step of IVF, at like on certain days, and just kind of manipulate the woman's cycle. Our clinic actually matched your natural cycle. So like you would go on your 30 days of birth control and then they would wait until you naturally started your period or whatever. So I liked it a little bit better for that reason. But the idea of birth control, if I remember right, is to kind of get your ovaries all, both of your ovaries at a dormant state, and then start stimulating all of both of them at the same time. So that's what I understood anyway.
Yeah, sounds accurate.
Don't take any of this for like medical advice. Please consult with your doctor and like figure out what all this stuff means for you. But this is what, this is our impression of IVF, and it's kind of a layperson's impression. So yeah, take that for what it's worth.
Even though you did so much research, and I'm sure in the moment when we were in it, you were, you knew exactly what was going on.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And it's been, how long has it been? 3-4 years? 3 years?
Yep. 3 years.
Yep. So it's been a while since I've thought about all this stuff. And I'm no reproductive endocrinologist.
So you had your period and you called them.
Yep. So that was always exciting. Like after you finish the last birth control pill and then you wait for your period. Mine was like 2 or 3 days later. It was awesome. Like it was always really fast, which was good. And so you get to call your nurse and then they give you the instruction of what to do next. And for us, that was starting your follicle stimulating hormone injections.
Those were the
FSH.
Those were the easy ones, right?
Those were, looking back on it, so easy.
Like literally injection into the tummy.
Yep.
Like right below your belly button. Or
yep. Just right next to or right below or right around your belly button is where those go. And you did those twice a day, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And it was kind of certain timing. It was like around what time you did it in the morning is around what time you would do it in the afternoon. And sometimes that meant like we were out doing something and we would have a little cooler with the injection in the cooler and have to like stop what we were doing and go give me an injection. And that was, I mean, like the giving yourself a shot in the stomach is daunting. And like I remember the first couple, I was so stinking nervous, but in hindsight, it really, those were really tiny needles and did not hurt like what we'll talk about soon. So anyway, you do that for about 6 days, and then you start getting every other day blood work and ultrasound done. At least that's how our clinic did. Most people are on the STEMs is what they call them, the follicle stimulating hormones. And there's different variations of what meds endocrinologists use. Some people are on a couple other things as well, I think. I think we were lucky that we only had that one. But so anyway, after 6 days of it, you start going in every day for blood work and ultrasound, which mine happened to be in two different places. I had to go in one place for the blood work and another place for the ultrasound. And this was all like before going into work for the day. So I had to kind of rearrange our schedule a bit during this time frame. And then from days 6 through 12, every other day you get that done. And usually women have their egg retrieval around day 12. But for me, I was a slow responder, and I think I ended up having my egg retrieval on like day 16 or 17. So it just meant more days of monitoring and more days of getting shots.
Yeah, I remember you being worried because you were a slow responder.
Right. Like when they initially measured or when they initially did the ultrasound, they said I had like, I can't remember the exact numbers, like 12 on one side and 10 on the other or something. And so I was expecting when I was getting close to the 12-day mark that there was going to be like at least 10 good-looking follicles. And there were like 3 or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like we, there was talks about us like canceling the whole cycle because I just wasn't responding.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really emotional.
Yeah. Well, and all that medication's super expensive. So, like, if you have to repeat all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had to, like, order more. And then, like, one of the biggest days of monitoring, like, it was, like, our last chance of, like, if I don't start responding to this medication, then we're going to have to cancel this cycle. And it fell on the weekend. And so we had to drive up to Charleston for that one. Do you remember that? It was on Sunday.
Yeah.
So we had to go up to Charleston and have like the monitoring done in the fertility clinic, which most of it they could do locally at like their satellite clinic. And so we went up and I went from like 3 or 4 follicles that she saw on Friday to like 12 on Sunday. It was just like miraculous.
Yeah, thank the Lord.
I know. I can't remember. They probably like increased my dose or something. But at that point, we also were like almost out of meds, and they gave us a sample of like a $600 vial of medication.
That's right.
So that was like a lot of answered prayers all around, because we would have spent $600 like overnighting meds to finish out the cycle, since I was taking forever to respond. So, yeah, that was fun times.
So then on to the actual egg retrieval.
Yeah. So this is where it got like the timing got really particular. So you stimulate, and then like the biggest fear you have is, well, besides not responding to the medicine, the biggest fear is that you accidentally ovulate on your own before they go in and get the eggs. So the whole point of this is for your body to create as many mature eggs at once as possible, so that when they go in and get the eggs, you have a lot of options to make embryos with sperm. So all of the eggs that you produce, of all of them that they can retrieve, not all of them are mature or like good quality. So anyway, like the more the merrier when you're making eggs. And so anyway, like the dance is to get the eggs as mature and good as possible, and then not ovulate on your own before the actual egg retrieval.
I remember you being super anxious about not ovulating.
Yes, that was a big fear of mine, because I've heard horror stories of people doing all of this and then they get in to do the egg retrieval and they had just ovulated.
I can't imagine.
That would just be terrible. So the timing of the trigger shot is really important. They give you an exact time, and that's what trigger... I'm not even sure. I should know what that
does. What exactly it triggers?
Yeah, it was... I'm pretty sure the medication was HCG, and you do it like once in the morning at a specific time and once at night at a specific time, and then you have a specific time the next morning to get your egg retrieval done.
That's a lot of specifics.
Yes, it was all very specific. It was like 10:15 or something. Mm-hmm. Like I remember it not even being like a clock hour. So after you do the trigger shot, then you go in for your egg retrieval the next day, which is under general anesthesia. So yeah, we had to go in that morning, and I couldn't wear makeup, and I mean, I basically got stripped down into a gown and went into an OR, and they put me under, and that's all I remember.
Yeah. And while she was doing that, then I went into the boom boom room that had a blue, like, satin couch.
Gross.
Like, nudie, like, Hustler magazines all over, and, like, it was this giant TV that, like, on the... like the initial screen had like shortcut to like pornographic movies and videos and stuff.
Oh, geez.
It was like exactly what like they portray in the movies.
Yeah.
It was like where the gentlemen do their business.
Exactly.
And they had like, this is a lot of detail, but they also had like, it wasn't lotion, but it was like all natural, like lubricant that you could use.
Like mineral oil.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's certain ones they won't let you use because it alters your sample or whatever.
Right, exactly.
That's
so
funny.
That was my experience while you were passed out. I was in that room by myself.
Yeah, super fun. I kind of hated the idea of our children being conceived to pornography. Essentially, like that's what it boils down to. So anyway, and this actually wasn't even planned. I did a boudoir photo shoot. Talk about personal information.
Yeah, no kidding.
Back when I thought Brad was deploying, which we talked about a few episodes back, I did a boudoir photo shoot for Brad to like take with him on his deployment. And so I was like, you are using these photos.
And I did. That's yeah. I thought the same thing. Like, I don't want to conceive our children like, you know, looking at something else.
Yeah, it's just really weird, like when you think about it.
Yeah,
but I mean, no judgment for anyone who went that route.
No,
it's
no.
Just, I don't know.
It was just our personal preference.
Yeah, it just kind of seems weird. Anyway.
Anyway, so I remember you were pretty loopy when you woke up.
Yeah, I don't really remember. I don't really remember much until like we were home.
So you don't remember like Dr. Short coming in and be like, hey, it went great, you know, we got a lot of eggs.
No, No.
You don't remember that at all?
I remember on our way home, like, realizing I didn't know how many he got and asking you, and you were like, you've asked me that like 3 times. But they got 18. That was the number.
Yes.
So then you wait for the phone calls to tell you like how many of those 18 are mature and then how many of those they fertilized.
Well, like we said earlier, it's called ICSI, which is, I believe, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. So basically, they choose an individual sperm and inject it into the egg.
Right. They pick like the best sperm. So if you have a morphology issue or if you have a number issue or whatever, it doesn't matter if you do ICSI. And ICSI costs extra.
Yeah, it was more expensive.
Right. But like in our scenario, it was what was recommended because they just didn't know what of the sample would get to the eggs. And they thought it would yield better results.
Exactly. And it did.
Yeah.
Like what was it, 3 days after? How many days after retrieval?
You get your initial number at the retrieval. And then 1 day later, they tell you how many of those actually fertilized successfully, which it was 16 of the 18.
And this was right at the time of March Madness, and it was like following the March Madness pattern, because after 16, then it went down to 8.
Right. Our next update was, I think, 48 hours later, and we had 8 embryos at that point. And then 48 hours after that, it had dropped down to 4.
It was the final 4.
Yep. And that was day 4. We were supposed to get a final update on day 5. And is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So right now on day 4, we were down to 4 already?
No. Or was it
2 days later, it was 16. Then day 4, it was 8.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Details are a little fuzzy.
Yeah, exactly.
We know something about March Madness.
Yeah, it followed March Madness and we ended with 4.
Yeah, and then we ended with 4. But like the twist was you're supposed to get an update day 5 because that's when they either decide they're going to freeze them and do a freeze all cycle where your body has to totally reset. Or if you're able to do a fresh cycle, then a few days later you do the transfer. But I overstimulated ultimately after being a really slow responder. I had like exorbitant amounts of estrogen in my body and they decided it wasn't conducive for pregnancy. And so they decided they had to freeze all of the embryos. And I think we knew that going into the egg retrieval that they would all be frozen on day 5. In a strange turn of events, the embryos slowed way down on their growth. And so they decided to give them an extra day to grow, but nobody told us that.
Oh, yeah, forget about that.
We just went all day 5 without a phone call.
Yeah, that was nice.
It was.
Rachel was livid.
Oh my gosh, losing my mind. Well, these are your babies, like quite literally.
Yes.
Your babies that you're waiting to hear about and
paying a lot of money for.
Exactly. And like at 4:30 or something, I called the clinic, left a message, and then didn't hear back by 5. And I was just losing it. I was just sure all of them were dead.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was terrible. So anyway, we got a call day 6. And they were able to freeze 4 embryos on day 6.
Yes.
So yeah, I just remember that being like, even the day that we found out that we had 18 eggs removed, I remember like feeling really emotionally attached to them.
To all 18?
Yes. It was a very strange feeling. And like each time we got an update and it was a lot less, it was like heartbreaking, but also like you expect that number to go down because everybody's does. Gesundheit. Gesundheit.
Thank you.
So on the heels of a deep moment, we're sneezing. And
yeah. Oh, I was going to
cut that. Oh, okay. Yeah,
so don't talk for a second.
So yeah, it was kind of heartbreaking watching our little embryos not make it, but A 4 was like a really good number to end with.
Yeah, almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a whole month.
Yes. I remember also the phone call of finding out we were going to be freezing everything. And it was like, you know, you're way further away from a pregnancy than at that point, because otherwise we would have just been transferring our embryos on day 6. So it was sad because then I had to like go on birth control again and then wait to start my period again. And then create an environment for pregnancy with hormones again.
Exactly. Lots more shots.
A lot more shots. That's what it boiled down to, is a lot more injections for me.
And we're trying to have fun with the shots. I mean, like, I remember one morning having Alexa play shots, shots, shot, shot, shot.
Oh,
shot,
yeah, yeah.
Shot, 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 shot.
Yeah, and that was like when we very first started vlogging, was pretty much at this point of our IVF process. So if you go back to like our very first videos, this is where we're at.
We're Brett and Rach on YouTube.
Yes, we have a YouTube channel. That's kind of how this all started. So yeah, it was the progesterone shots were no fun. But first we had to do birth control for another month. Wait, start my period. And as soon as I started my period, I started taking estrogen pills, which make you kind of nauseous. Like, those aren't too fun.
Yeah, I bet.
I forgot to talk about like side effects of the stimulation process too. Like doing the stimulation injections and then growing follicles. Like, you have a ton of extra fluid in your abdomen from all of the follicles that you're not used to growing all at the same time. So if anyone's like facing IVF, that was probably the most uncomfortable part of the process, was towards the end, right before the egg retrieval, you just felt really full and bloated.
I think we'll do an additional podcast of things that we wish we knew before we did IVF.
Great idea.
So write that down.
Okay. So yeah.
So then you went into the progesterone in oil PIO shots, which we actually... It's kind of like the consistency of peanut butter, molasses, I would say.
Yes, it's really thick. And so they say to like warm it up because it will like inject into your muscle easier.
So I would try to like warm it up in my hands and armpit, crotch.
But then we ultimately warmed it up in warm water.
Yeah.
We got smart. And
then that injection would be like your lower outer back, really.
Yeah, it's like the top of your...
Just above your buttocks.
But.
And those seem to be the worst.
Yes. Right before we started those, though, so I was on the estrogen for 2 weeks, and then they have to do an ultrasound to make sure that your lining is...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your lining. I forgot
prepared for a transfer, or is thick enough, and then you start injections of progesterone, and then you have another... You do that for 5 days, and then you have another lining check before they do... the transfer. And it has... your lining of your uterus has to be thick enough that, like, according to their studies, will support the transfer of an embryo.
So you had a wand up your vagina a lot.
Either a needle in my butt or a wand in my vagina for like 2 months straight.
Fun.
Oh, so fun. And this wasn't even my infertility issue.
You're a real trooper, honey. Although I got you pregnant naturally later.
That's true. That's true.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Transfer day.
Yeah. Well, backing up a little bit, those progesterone shots.
Oh, you want to talk about those some more?
Oh, they were so miserable. By far my least favorite part of IVF.
You like literally almost wanted to quit.
For sure.
I remember.
Yep. Like day 3. Oh my gosh. In those first 5 days, you do them twice a day, morning and night. And so you're doing like one, the right side in the morning, the left side at night. I was so dang sore. I couldn't sit down. And then if I was sitting down, I couldn't stand up. It was just miserable. So that was the worst part for me. And in Brad's defense, he's never had to do an intramuscular injection before. But I guess like the first couple that you did were too low or something. They were like in my...
But I mean, we literally like drew a circle on your back.
And eventually we did.
Yeah.
Eventually. I think that was like when I couldn't take it anymore. And I'm like, you've got to be missing the mark. It should not hurt this much. So...
Did it get better though? I don't feel like it did.
I feel like those first few days were the worst, but they were also the twice a day.
Yeah, it was
later
brutal.
After they do the transfer, it's just once a day, and that made a huge difference because you would have a day in between having one side injected. So, anyway,
transfer day. We wore special outfits.
Yep, I made IVF shirts. What did yours say?
I think it said fertility medication
administrator.
Administrator, yeah.
Yes.
And what was yours?
It said IVF, and then it had like PIO and like a bunch of IVF trigger words in a circle around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute.
It was cute. So that was a kind of a happy day. Like,
it was. It was a relaxing.
Yeah, I didn't have to be put under.
Well, it wasn't relaxing on the way to get there.
That's true.
So we drove about an hour and a half to get to the clinic, and about a half an hour away from the clinic, there was a giant electrical pole and cable in the middle of the road and like a mile backup of traffic.
And to make it even worse, they ask you to fill your bladder so that they can see better what they're doing when they do the transfer under ultrasound. So I was drinking, like starting about a half hour before we got there, I was trying to get 40 ounces of water down and was like partially through that and had to pee already. So that was not good.
That's just the worst, isn't it?
Oh, it was so bad. I remember by the time we got there, I was like, as we were walking down the hallway to go to the OR where they did the transfer, I could feel pee like trickling down my leg. Like I couldn't even hold it anymore.
And you went and
yes.
Let a little out.
So she put the ultrasound wand and was like, oh, your bladder's way too full. She's like, we can't see anything. So I had to go to the bathroom and fill up like a Dixie cup and stop.
Yeah.
That was hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd that go?
I did it.
Did it sting?
No.
See, for men, it stings.
It doesn't sting.
It does for men. I wonder why that is.
That's really weird. No, it did not sting.
We need to Google that someday.
Yeah.
Like, why does it sting for men to stop peeing, but it doesn't for women?
No, it didn't sting. I just really wished I could have gone a little bit more than that.
Yeah. So it was super cute because on the transfer day, like, I was in the operating room with you holding your hand, and we literally watched the operation on the TV screen above us.
We didn't even talk about deciding we were going to transfer two embryos.
Oh.
They gave us the choice.
Yes, they did.
We watched two embryos transfer into me that day.
Yeah, so our doctor, what were the statistics exactly that he gave us?
He said if we only transferred one embryo, it was like in the 40s. He thought we had about a 40%
getting pregnant.
Right. Just based on the fact that our embryos had slowed way down in growth on day 5. So, yeah, he said 40%-ish if we transferred one and like 70-something percent if we transferred two.
And they do grade the embryos. It's kind of on a like an arbitrary scale. So you could look that up, but there's like AA, AB, blah, blah, blah. And ours like wasn't. They transferred the two best.
Right. But he didn't put a lot of weight in the grading scale anyway.
Yeah, he wasn't a big fan of the grading scale.
Well, he said like from the best to the worst, there's only like a few percentage points difference in success rate. So it's just not that much of a difference. So he gave us the statistics of multiples. And he said there was like a 15% chance of twins and then like a 3% chance of triplets, meaning one embryo splits and they both take and so does the other embryo that they transferred. So we were kind of hoping that was not going to be the case
exactly.
For us.
And we did not get our embryos genetically tested. That's something that you can do. Neither of us have a family history of any genetic diseases, so we decided not to get them tested. Also, it's like an additional couple thousand of dollars.
Yes. Which at this point, we were already at like 15 grand.
And there is a risk that the embryo could be destroyed when
That's
you do that
true.
As well. So
a little scary.
It just wasn't worth it for us.
Right.
But for some people, definitely worth it.
Well, we're going to do a whole video on like ethics of IVF. And that's one thing that is really iffy, is that potentially they could find an issue with an embryo that would maybe correct itself, but they would destroy the embryo over it. So we don't really know of the things that they genetically test for, what things would kind of work themselves out if given the opportunity. So kind of an interesting topic, something we just didn't even want to have to make a decision on.
Exactly.
So we prayed about it, talked to our parents, and ultimately decided to transfer two embryos.
Everybody was on board for twins.
Yes, that was the thing. Like, if we had twins, we were all totally okay with it. But if it was just one, obviously we would be overjoyed.
Exactly. Probably, well, I don't know if it's the toughest, but the 2-week wait.
Oh my gosh.
After the transfer, there's 2 weeks before you find out.
Yes, that's, we got to shave a little bit of time off of that because our embryos were already 6 days old. So we really had like an 11-day wait.
But it felt like an eternity.
And we really shaved that down too because we tested on day 5 after the transfer.
That was all Rachel.
It was.
I was like so worried because Rachel would have just been crushed if that test would have came back negative.
That's true.
Even though like there was a chance. So like on day 5, you know, there's a chance that you're pregnant, but it just doesn't show up on the test yet.
Exactly.
And so I said that to her like a million times just to like prepare her for this test to be negative.
Right. And I said like a million times, I'm prepared for this to be negative. I just want to know if it's positive. So we had this like, I started on day 4 and then we ultimately decided to test after work on day 5.
And I didn't want to be any part of it, but
I had the most sensitive test on the market.
Literally.
Yes. And I was ready and it ended up being fine. We got 2 lines. For the first time ever, we had a positive pregnancy test.
It was such a relief.
It was a huge relief and just like so exciting. And at that point, we didn't know if it was 1 or 2. But like, of course, I peed on a stick every single time I peed.
Yeah, literally every time she peed. I've said literally a lot.
Have you?
Yes, oh. I've literally said literally a lot.
Oh, dang it.
I'm not going to say it the rest of the podcast.
I'm like going to start like saying like.
Anyway.
So I literally peed on a stick every time
Yeah, you could say it.
Yeah.
And it was positive every time.
Every time. And it was getting darker fast.
Yeah, it was crazy how dark it was.
So then we're like, I wonder if it's twins. And I'm like Googling line progressions of twins. And it was
you and your research.
Yes.
You know, looking back, it's really scary, the statistics on IVF. Like before we started IVF, actually even during, I didn't really know much about IVF. Like I knew a couple of people in my life that, you know, had done it before. And so I didn't really do much research on the statistics. I kind of just assumed like, hey, if you go and you get IVF, you're going to get pregnant. That couldn't be further from the truth.
No, that's definitely not.
The stats are scary. Like we were lucky.
Really?
Yes. Even our clinic in Charleston that I won't name, but like so the CDC has reports of success rates for clinics. They're a little bit older. I think they're from the year like 2016, maybe in 2017. But our overall clinic, and they break them down in age groups, because obviously there's a big difference. It's like under 35 and then 35 to 37, 37 to 39, and then 40 and older. Mm-hmm. And even under 35, the success rate at our clinic was in the 30s.
You're kidding.
No. Can you believe that?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I thought it was way higher than that.
Yeah, me too. It wasn't.
That's sad.
I know. It's scary.
It is scary.
It's really scary.
Wow.
Yeah. The exact number. So it's pretty cool. I mean, you can go on the CDC site and look up your clinic. So like ours, They did 818 cycles. They had 315 positive pregnancy tests, which then went
dwindled down.
Yeah, to 248 deliveries.
30%.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
I know, it's crazy.
That's the other thing is like you get pregnant and then
it's not a guaranteed delivery.
No.
At all.
No. 22, so that means 22% of pregnancies miscarried.
Wow. That's scary.
That's really scary. That's a lot higher, I feel like, than what's average, like in natural conception, which yeah. I don't know.
Well, and that was overall, too. That didn't break it down into age groups.
Okay. Well, so. I mean, that's a big gross number. That's a big overview, I guess is the word I was looking for. Yeah, that's really sad. We were very lucky.
Exactly.
It's obvious that Baron Lindell really wanted to be here.
Yeah.
It's just also really, really amazing that Bear and Lindell are living children that are asleep right now, right down the hall, were frozen.
That is mind-boggling.
They were frozen. They were in an incubator. Well, the opposite of an incubator. They were in a petri dish in a freezer.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And thawed out.
So you know what else is crazy?
What?
Did you read just the other day about the woman who gave birth to twins through IVF that they weren't their children?
No.
And they knew immediately because the couple that did IVF is Asian and neither of the kids were Asian.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And this couple lived like in New York, but they flew to LA to go to this specific clinic because it was such an awesome clinic.
Oh my gosh.
And so they reported spending over $100,000 for this one cycle.
And my gosh. Now what?
They gave up. They gave back the babies. The clinic figured out who the parents are.
How? I guess
genetic testing. Yeah. Yeah. So now, obviously, there's a huge lawsuit.
Whoa. I mean, I just can't imagine, first of all, being the woman that carried them. I can't imagine. Second of all, being the parents of the babies and like, here's your baby.
Yeah.
Here's your biological child that is in this world now. Like, yeah. I wonder if they had planned on using their embryos and all of a sudden they just got like a free surrogate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The article didn't detail that. I don't know.
I want to know.
It's unbelievable. That was in the, I read that in the Washington Post, by the way.
I also heard, and this is a rumor, and I don't know what news source would have even covered this. I don't even remember who told me this, but I guess like a worker at an IVF clinic was putting his samples in like one of the what's the guy that works in the lab?
Embryologists
was putting his own samples with people's eggs and making like his biological children.
No way.
Yes. I mean, I think it's a rumor, but.
Yeah, we'll have to fact check that one.
Yeah. Do we have a fact checker yet?
Yeah, we need one. We need to hire somebody. So a really good resource is resolve.org. They have lots of information about IVF. So that's a really great place to start. Matt and Dory's Facebook group is a really good place to start as well. Lots of questions answered there.
There's also just like general IVF groups on Facebook that I was in all of them, I think. I don't know that I'm in them anymore, but also a huge resource and also scary too. If you don't want to see worst case scenarios, don't join those groups because I don't know. It can be pretty discouraging sometimes. And then also if you're like sensitive about seeing other people's success, which I know can sometimes be hard when you've been unsuccessful for so long of trying to do something like have a baby and you see other people succeeding all around you, that can be difficult. And there's a lot of success stories in groups like that. So just be mindful of that before you start joining.
Yeah, I think Matt and Dory's Facebook group is good about that. Like if you do have like a success story, it's in the comments rather than in like the initial post.
Oh, okay.
Because they're pretty, they're sensitive to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Pretty awesome.
Yep.
Well, I think that'll wrap up this episode.
Yeah.
My family is coming into town this weekend, and hopefully I'm going to get my brother and his wife on the podcast.
Yes. They are awesome parents of three really cool little boys.
And so we hope we get to talk to them about it.
Yes. I'm sure they have some great parenting advice.
So look forward to that.
Yeah.
And then we'll break down the cost of IVF in a podcast and do more talks about ethics and things that we wish we knew before we started.
For sure. Those are things that I wish we had available to us when we started.
Exactly. So we're going to pass them on to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in. Hit us up. Our email is below. You know, honestly, questions about IVF probably would be better to ask somebody else just because we're so far removed. But I mean, if you have any questions specifically for us, send an email.
Yeah, for sure. And if you go to our main page and scroll down, you'll see some stars that you can just easily click on and give our podcast a rating. We would super appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll shake your hand and
yeah, give you a pat on the back.
Exactly. Love you forever.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Have a great day.
Bye.